CTRT 2, room 4C, July 17th, 2013, 9 a.m.
Good morning. Good morning. Are we recording?
Yes.
Are we on? Okay. This is Brian Cute. This is ATRT2 meeting with RSAC, and all I can say is that's a long hallway, and why does C come after D? and my apologies for being a few minutes late. Good morning, and thank you for your time. This is part of ATRT2's outreach to the community. Just to frame the discussion that we're going to have, in terms of our work phase, we are still in data collection and listening mode. We're going to be developing proposed recommendations and issuing them for public comment in mid-October. There will be an opportunity to comment on those proposed recommendations, but the inputs here will help us form our assessment, our report, and recommendations, and we welcome that input. The questions that you have in front of you are basically of two types. The 1 through 6 represent questions that have come top of mind to us at this point in our work. They're just questions. They're not preliminary conclusions or assumptions. And the balance of the questions are questions that we developed having read public comment that we've received to date. That's the nature of the questions. For today, please feel free to respond to any or all of the questions, but don't be constrained by them. We're here to listen to whatever inputs you have that relate to the work of the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. And understanding what your respective backgrounds are, you're still longstanding members of this community, so don't be constrained by your particular area of expertise either. So with that framing, really the floor is yours. We're here to listen and have a bit of a dialogue. So, Lars, to you.
Okay, thank you so much. I understand that you're recording and possibly also casting over the network, so I'll introduce myself. My name is Lars Johan Liman. I'm the newly elected, one of the newly elected co-chairs of the Root Service System Advisory Committee, RSAC. And with me here are also three other members of the new executive committee of the RSAC. They are Elise Gehrig, Brad Bird, and Suzanne Wolf. And I'm very glad for their support. The Root Service System Advisory Committee has been around since the very first ICANN meeting, but it's been I wouldn't say hiding, because that suggests an active thing, but it hasn't been very visible. And one of the reasons is that the RSAC has a very narrow focus on what it does. The scope is very narrow. And the group of people who has constituted the RSAC has been mainly technical experts, which do not usually follow the major part of the discussions in ICANN, because they're very strictly focused on the root service system. And that means that the meetings of the RSAC have traditionally been conducted during the IETF meetings, or in conjunction with the IETF meetings instead, because that's where these technical experts normally travel. But over the long years that RSAC has existed, there has been discussion, but that I and another group of members have felt that this is not really working well. The process has been extremely slow. Glacial speed comes to mind as a term. And transparency has not been very good. We have not succeeded in having exchange of information and building relationships with the other organizations, sub-organizations within ICANN, and outreach has been very, very limited. So we eventually got to a state where we said that we need to restart. This doesn't work. We need to reboot the entire system, and that's what we're doing right now. So a document that outlined the transition process has been written. We have submitted or requested changes to ICANN's bylaws regarding RSAC, and they have been passed. And we have now elected a new steering group according to the new format, the new organization that we're trying to design. So we have an executive committee with members from the root server operators and from the root zone administration side, who now, right now, work to build the new RSAC. And it will consist of this executive committee. It will consist of a broader caucus around there, where we'll invite members that we will work with, create work parties, and try to have a more focused process, which will hopefully be a bit quicker than the current one, which is extremely slow. And in that process, we also very much want to increase the transparency and visibility of RSAC. One of the very first steps is that I am here. I have been meeting with various parties during my few days here, trying to build new relationships and so on. And we also, we're writing documents right now. We have two very rough draft documents, one covering the scope and the roles of the various parts of this new RSAC that we were planning on. What's the role of the executive committee, what's the role of caucus, and what's the role of the wider community that we want to interact with. And also a second document that deals with our internal processes. How shall we work, voting procedures, document preparation, all that stuff. But they are in a very rough draft status for the moment, so we're not quite willing to share them yet, but we would like to do so soon. So we are also in listening mode. We want to learn and kind of interact with other parts of ICANN and other organizations to see how do they work, and which of these procedures and design parts can be relevant for us and may work in our environment. So right now it's not cast in stone how the RSAC will work in the future, but we have a number of ideas. We're looking a lot at SSAC, because they seem to have working procedures and so on. Now, SSAC and RSAC are different beasts. They have very different scope and different types of outreach, but still there seems to be a lot to learn from SSAC, so we're working closely with them. Now, that said, I've worked through your questions, and many of them I don't really know what to respond, because I've, as you note, I've been a member of the ICANN community, but only in a very dark corner. So I've not been involved in policy development procedures and such things. So I don't have much to contribute, but I'm not going to say I don't care. Yeah. But because I realize that if every subbody of ICANN says I don't care about the others, we're not going to have the interaction that we need to produce good results. And that means that I want to reach out in the future, and I may have better things to say in a couple of years' time. But right now, I don't have the experience that I would like to have to give input to you.
Allow me to give you a prompt on things we've been hearing and things we're thinking about, and they tie very much into your first points, and it's very interesting to hear. Because one of the questions are the working methodologies of your group fully accountable and transparent? If not, how could they be enhanced or improved? So you're speaking directly to question 14 with your remarks. But one of the themes we're hearing is the need for better cross-community deliberation, not just in terms of interactions and communication, but also as it ties into PDP process. And there's been a fair amount of input to this group about the PDP process. We're going to have an independent expert looking at the PDP process. Lots of input about GAC's ability or difficulties in providing input to other constituencies as policy is being made. So this actually is a critical theme. And in our recommendations, we may be targeting enhancements to cross-community deliberations. So in that aspect, what have you seen in terms of two things? When you have interacted with other constituencies or bodies in the past, how has the dynamic gone? And also, in terms of policy development processes, what dynamics have you observed in terms of RSAC when it gets pulled into the process, how it participates in that process? If you could speak to those two points, that'd be great, I think.
I can go first or next, whatever. I'm having a little difficulty separating the questions, so I'll just sort of comment a little bit on that. As the long-term liaison from RSAC to the ICANN board, and having had a lot of times at ICANN meetings and in ICANN community contexts where I'm the only RSAC representation, which means that the role of the board liaison gets overloaded rather severely at times. And one of the things we have to work out is exactly what that role entails and how we distribute some of the responsibilities for engagement more widely. Because one of the observations I will say, I feel very strongly after all the years of engagement here, it's very difficult for a small and narrowly focused group that has, you know, we believe powerful input on a very specific set of topics, but that is relevant to a significant variety of what goes on in this community, it's very hard to see exactly how to engage effectively. It can be very labor intensive, very time intensive. Concerns of disclosure and conflicts of interest are absolutely appropriate. You know, as a board, you know, as a liaison to the board, I have seen these things up close and personal, and I understand where they come from, and for the most part, I support them. But it does add overhead to have to take into consideration all of those aspects of participating in this community all the time for a small group of people. In particular, it can be quite difficult to provide input. Part of our function as an advisory committee, I have always felt, is to provide input to policy development processes of other groups. And there are we're looking up close, and, you know, because we're in this position of recreating governance mechanisms, we've actually been looking fairly closely at how other groups in the community do that, how those functions are performed, whether it's through staff or through liaisons of various kinds or cross-membership. and pretty much regardless of how you structure it, there's still significant overhead and significant work involved in getting up to speed on any specific issue from the point of view of another group to such an extent that you can really provide meaningful input to what's really a process they own. I don't know how to improve that. As Liman has said, we're also in listening mode because we're looking for mechanisms that will be effective for us. You know, how to do liaisons, how to do operating procedures, how to manage membership. But I think the concern of the overhead of participation is very real for us.
Thank you for that. Questions from the ATRT? No? Lars, did you have thoughts of your own?
No, I don't think I have any.
I think we might have, but just for, we might have Barbara Roseman on the phone also as ICANN staff support, so I'm not sure whether you would, whether she would want to comment or you would want her to, but I believe she's also out there.
Okay, thank you. Let me try to tease out part of the question I asked too. The policy development process, how effective that is depends on a number of things. And there's been comment, you know, with respect to how PDPs can take quite some time, how there is a challenge in terms of cross-community deliberation, how issues, and this is what I'd like to focus on, how issues can arise sometime into the process and then extend a process when perhaps they should have been identified earlier. Do you have any observations from an RSAC perspective about whether that you've observed that or not, and if so, what your thoughts are on that?
Sure. I can certainly echo the concern. Again, from the perspective not only of, you know, I can't, not only of RSAC, but of, as closely involved with the workings of the board, there's a vicious cycle we've got going where the board is sort of the policy arbiter of last resort, but the board wouldn't need to do that if, in fact, some of the cross-discussion and some of the support for each other's concerns came up earlier through the process. It's better than it used to be, in my very general opinion, but we still have challenges. I think ESSAC actually tries very hard to do a good job. There are several liaisons to I'm also an ESSAC member, so I get to compare these mechanisms and so on. I think ESSAC actually does a very good job of trying to keep track of where issues are arising and to try to weigh in early. But that takes a significant membership size and a significant amount of staff support to do an even remotely credible job. And there's still a lot of choosing that has to be done, not only what issues to take up, but where in the various policy and advisory processes to get involved. And from what, you know, even with a remit that's pretty well understood, you know, ESSAC has a pretty strong internal culture, a pretty strong understanding of what we think our mission is. It's still very difficult to figure out exactly where to engage and how to be most effective.
Avery.
Thank you. Avery Doria speaking. I guess I do have a question, because while in my mind I kind of always thought that I knew what RSAC did, when you've talked several times about our mission, our strong mission, and how it fits, all of a sudden I find I'm drawing a blank in terms of really understanding what your mission is. So when you ask, how do we fit in, I'm going, well, yeah, the root server's got to work, and there's security, and every once in a while, GAC asks a question that needs to be answered by you all, but...
Okay, let me first of all correct, I misspoke a little bit, and I have to apologize for that. Not enough coffee yet this morning. Because what I would say, what I was comparing is what we're trying to build with RSAC to what ESSAC has, which is a pretty strong sense of where ESSAC should get involved and how it should engage. And it's still difficult, was kind of the point. So from the perspective of trying to build structures for RSAC, you know, I like that. I want us to recreate something like that as much as possible, but it's not clear how, because the overhead is quite significant in terms of staff resources and in terms of the time and energy of the participants. With regards to RSAC, we actually did recently go through an exercise of getting a new charter, so we do have a pretty clear sense. I would like to think as sort of the initial membership, as we grapple with the fact we need wider involvement and we need wider participation and we need to define that, who to invite and how to get work done and how to make sure we get closure on our work items, which has historically been a major problem. But the sense is that RSAC is here to provide advice. You know, and as a board chartered committee, the board is the first on the list of the constituencies, but by no means only. The board to ICANN, to the broader community, and I'm realizing I really should point out this is just my opinion, and I hope my colleagues will chime in because we haven't consulted about this. But our mission is to, in addition to being a pool of DNS expertise, which there are others in the community, we try to provide a very specific perspective having to do with infrastructure, and because we work with the administrative authority over the root zone, there's an additional set of perspectives we can provide. And I'm realizing that I'm drawing a total blank on the chart, on the new charter and the bylaws, but it's basically you can look at it. The RSAC page on the ICANN website, you know, has the bylaws excerpt, and we're basically here to provide a fairly specific perspective to ICANN and to the board, the community, on issues specific to DNS infrastructure and the administration of the root zone as it relates to the operational concerns of making sure the DNS works. I realize that's not very articulate, and I apologize for that. It's a little early, and it's a little early today, and it's a little late in the meeting. So if one of my colleagues wants to add something, I sure hope they'll help me out here.
Hi, this is Elise Garrick speaking as the IANA functions operator on RSAC, which is also an ICANN role. But anyway, I wanted to mention, Suzanne pointed out the operational aspect, and I think that is a difference between the RSAC and other advisory committees. The core of the RSAC has membership primarily from organizations that operate the infrastructure of the Internet, and their role is to give advice that will impact, I think, the operational aspects of managing root servers. And so that it does make them somewhat different than, say, ESSEC, which has a very strong skill set that are related to the security and stability and draws from a broader pool of potential experts than the RSAC, which really draws from primarily operational folks for the core membership. But my colleagues at the table, and since there are only four of us, may disagree. But I know Brad's in an operational seat, and Suzanne's in an operational seat, and Lars Johan is also in an operational seat.
It is probably wise at this point to note one of the aspects of being an advisory committee, not an SO, where it's our purpose to generate advice that people will regard as well-founded and will want to take. But we're not in a position to issue binding advice. And we've discovered, actually, that that's not always clear within the community as one of the key differences between ACs and other bodies, that ACs really, really work hard to make actionable advice that people will see it to their benefit in taking, but we don't get to, you know, we don't end up making binding recommendations or policies.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I mean, following and on something you said, because you had said, and it's something that we hear a lot, is that our role is to give advice to the board and the rest of the community. But in a sense, having been part of the process that was doing new GTLDs, and all of a sudden all the GAC questions that involved RSAC questions sort of came at the end of the day after we had already done everything without having any advice. Do you see a role in dealing with the processes that are going on and somehow spotting something like, you know, an undefined influx of new GTLDs early in a process to say, we should be, or is there, I mean, because I know that since I was chair of it at the time, we never even thought to talk to you, and you know, I mean, we talked a lot in the hallway, but we never thought to connect. And sitting here in this room looking back on it, that kind of looks dumb to me that we never thought to connect. And so I'm wondering how that looks.
That looks very familiar. because that is, in fact, and the perspective I'd formed on that kind of issue is that it's very, very difficult to figure out, first of all, the mechanisms of engagement. You know, who do you ask for these kinds of opinions? And we need to raise it. This is something that my colleague has been very clear about in a whole bunch of meetings the last few days. We have to be more visible. People have to think of going to us.
We didn't even think that we had questions for you. I mean, it comes one step even before that. We didn't realize that there were questions we should have been asking.
And there's a certain point, and there is a certain set of issues that only... And this is where it gets interesting that the board as the policy body of last resort sort of points up a dysfunction in the whole underlying system. Because, and I realize that's a strong phrase, and I realize I'm on the record saying that, but I do believe it. That it's actually quite difficult to characterize what would engagement look like that caught these things early. So instead what you end up with is things feeling like they're being raised late, and a scramble to come up with well-defined questions and relationships that can support getting them answered.
Let me ask... Oh, Lars, please. No.
Lars Lehmann again. And I want to stress that this is... We are exactly looking for opportunities to get into the process at an earlier stage. That's I see that as one of our main focuses. And by being more visible and more approachable, we hope to... create a notion of root service exists. Here is the body where issues relating to root service can be discussed, where questions can be asked, where input can be given. But since the RSAC hasn't been very visible so far, I can well understand that no one thinks of contacting us. And also it falls back on ourselves just as much, because we haven't been reaching out. We haven't been seeking... looking carefully for issues that we need to deal with or where we feel that we want to engage.
Thank you. Let me come back to the transparency, the working methodologies of the group and the transparency of that. And I'm just very pleased that this engagement will spur on what I'm sure is a very dynamic discussion about your charter next time you guys get together. We talked to SSAC. We've asked this question to everybody. One of the issues that came up in SSAC was that out of necessity, because of the nature of the things they discuss, often they have to operate behind closed doors and offline, if you will. ATRT2, our default position is that all of our operations are open, all of our activities are open, unless there is a clear, specific need and we have a Chatham House rule available to us to go into private session, but default open. A clear understanding that when it comes to security issues, there's a need sometimes to be in a private setting. That being said, we had that discussion with SSAC. We heard some interesting input from SSAC about a consideration on their part to be more open as well. Do you also have specific issues like SSAC that require you to be in private settings? Is there a way for those where you don't have those issues, you can be more open, or are you pretty good as is? Thanks.
I definitely share your view here. The default setting should be open. I come from a society, the Swedish society, where openness is actually very important, and my wife, who happens to work for a government agency, she's well familiar with the situation there. A citizen, actually any Swedish citizen, can call any government agency, "I want to see that document, please give me a copy." And she has to drop what she's working with, because that's a priority thing, unless the document is specified as secret or something like that. But all official, all documents are official and public, and you can just call them and say, I want to see it. Journalist, citizen, anyone. I like that. I want to see, I want to be as public as that if I can. Now, I can foresee that we may run into some issues that will need to be handled in a more careful way. Right now, I don't see that we have that, for the moment at least, but I'm not willing to give a full carte blanche for the entire future, so that everything will be open. In the past, we've been rather bad at publishing. It's not because we want to be secretive, but because we haven't had working procedures for doing it, and we've finally now managed to publish the minutes from the two meetings we've had since we rebooted. That was a bit of a struggle. Actually, not on our part, but because there were no existing procedures to update web pages and stuff, it's taken a while. But they are there now, and we hope that it'll be smoother in the future. And we have decided to publish not only minutes that state the decisions that are taken, but also reflect the discussion that's been going on. And that's a way to try to be extra open about what's going on. I'm not quite clear on how the meetings are going to be. I can envisage, and please bear in mind that this is not cast in stone. This is not discussed to an end point yet. This is my personal view that we're going to probably have meetings that are close to the group, because maybe we want to discuss things and to find a resting point where we can make a statement, but I definitely also want to have the input and relationship with the broader community. So I would kind of see maybe we have two types of meetings, and closed meetings are not a good thing. So if you want to have a closed meeting, there has to be a reason for it. So I would actually prefer meetings to be more open than we have now. But, as I said, we're in the developing process to try to find a good way, and I will guess that our first attempt will not be the best one. We will have to redefine that as we go along, because that's the human nature. We try to make something, we find that it's not perfect, we improve on it, and it's a step-by-step procedure. But it's definitely the intent to try to be as open as possible.
So is it fair to say that in terms of all the aspects of your work where you've been closed, it's not by charter, it's just been by practice and habit, and that you're now addressing not just perhaps a different posture, but formalizing that?
You're quite right. I would even say that it's malpractice and malhabit. Yeah. but yes, we're definitely trying to put structure into to that, and to make it more open and visible. And it's also somewhat has been depending on actually individual persons and their personalities. I want to try to be more open and outgoing, but some other people don't have that nature, so I hope to create a difference.
Well, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but there has been discussion of initial membership and how much to do more or less temporarily, or as you know, the chair's discretion, while we are setting up formal operating procedures. And there's a couple of things we're doing and a couple of things we're arguing about doing. That where we have a real tension between being as open as possible now about some things that are still in progress that are really not cooked yet, things like draft operating procedures. And we're not used to grappling, you know, directly with, as my colleague says, we're probably not going to get it right the first time. because we haven't had to grapple before with, all right, yeah, this isn't cooked yet, but it's going to worry people if we don't tell them where we are, even though where we are is going to be misunderstood in a different set of ways, and you just have to sort of resign yourself that there's sort of a rough and tumble there, and not everybody's used to that. So it's frankly a defaulting to that is taking, you know, a certain amount of mental agility.
Let me ask a question going back to the PDP process and when issues arise. It's occurring to me, and this is just a concept that's forming, that there may be ways to improve against that negative dynamic if at the outset, if at the chartering of the process where a recommendation is made by the GNSO or any other body, that at that stage of the game is where you should have the clearest issue identification and understanding what constituencies, what advisory committees work are going to be required in the process. That seems pretty obvious to me, as opposed to RSAC members who are under-resourced and just doing their thing, trying to figure out, looking at the mass of consultations that are ongoing, hey, where should we be plugging ourselves in? That just doesn't make sense. Do you think there might be some utility in putting focus on the initiation stage and maybe recommending some mechanisms, be they expert groups or other input mechanisms, so that the issue identification happens fully and clearly at the outset to avoid this dynamic of 6 months in, somebody goes, hey, you know, this might be a root issue, and let's get that ginned up now.
Yeah, there might be a technical issue underlying this.
I think it's a good idea, but I think it's a bit of wishful thinking, because in my experience, that's not really how the human brain works. Even if you have a large group of people that want to do that, it isn't until you kind of worked with an issue, thought of a problem, discussed it with other people, that you eventually realize that, oh, we have a problem here down the line. I can say one example from the technical side is the development of Security NS, where we had it all done in the year 2000, and people started to use it and realized, we cannot administer this. It's secure, but there's no way we can handle the administrative load dealing with this. We have to redesign. And that's how you discover problems as you walk along. So it's desirable to do it the way you say, but I think it's in the human nature that we're not mentally able to find all the problems and issues from the outset. So we have to discover them as we go along in the process. Now, that said, there can probably definitely be improvement. And I would like to reach out to the other bodies within ICANN who do policy development and brief them and inform them and kind of educate them that these are issues that you should be looking for. When you start to get near these areas, you're starting to get close to roots of operations, and would you please then talk more to us? And we will try to keep an eye open when you get near our turf, so that we can build a bridge, so that we can communicate, so we can inform you, you can inform us, and we can try to meet and make things work. But it will require more participation from RSAC in ICANN, but also hopefully that the other organizations are open to our inputs and to our wish to bring stuff to their table.
Thank you for that. David?
First, as someone who has been perhaps a bit on the more critical side of the RSAC, in my past history, I have to commend the efforts that RSAC is undertaking to revise their structure. I think it's pretty amazing work. I'm glad that it is occurring at this point. My question is related more to the logistics of the efforts that you're undertaking, and it I suspect you won't be able to answer it, but actually maybe Mr. Olive there in the back might be able to provide some input. A lot of the things that you're going to be undertaking, the efforts that you have indicated that you wish to move forward on, are going to require sort of non-trivial resources in terms of probably staff support, presumably some level of travel support, that sort of stuff. Have you, or not you personally, but RSAC, have you gotten to a point where you've done sort of preliminary analyses of what the resource requirements will be? And if you have, has that been passed up to ICAM, in open way, or basically has there been the budgeting exercise done for RSAC?
If I may, David Olive, Vice President of Policy Development and Support, it falls to our team to provide the support as we do for the ESSAC and the other advisory committees as well as the SOs and ACs, to provide subject matter expert and secretariat support and indeed participation of the members as they need for travel to ICANN meetings. We do, of course, have, and we were anticipating these changes, working with the groups that are here, and trying to anticipate in the budget to have additional staff. We have two people, Barb Roseman as subject matter expert, assisted by Carlos Riaz of the policy team. We will also provide some administrative support, and we also are thinking within the FY14 budget possible travel support as well, depending on where they wanted to meet. We're working with them because sometimes they meet at IETF meetings, and sometimes we're trying to encourage them also to meet at ICANN meetings, so there's the incentive to provide some travel support to some members. So that has all been part of the restructuring process, and we are encouraging that, and we were collaborating with the chairs and members and the board member along the way.
Yeah, I think we have to say to that we're not quite to the point of doing that analysis, because there's some really basic groundwork to be done before that, having to do with where do work items come to us from and how do we structure our work. And for instance, we're looking at things like how big does RSAC really need to be in order to do quality work in a timely way with appropriate transparency and still have procedures that support actually getting closure and getting work completed and published, for instance, which has historically been a problem for us. That back and forth between structure and resources and doing the meaningful work, there's a lot of back and forth there. I mean, I've observed this process as part of the ICANN world and as part of the board for a very long time, and I'm surprised at how intricate it gets. And the fact is, we have to try to keep it as simple as possible because we really do want to get around to doing substantive work. And we could be lost in process hell indefinitely, which may be another concern, frankly, with regards to the question of the efficiency of the policy processes and so on. How much structure and process do you need for credibility and to enable doing real work?
Anything else from HRT2 members or RSAC now? Okay, thanks very much for the inputs. Very helpful. I think that gives you a flavor of our thinking, or some of our thinking. Again, you'll see draft, proposed, final recommendations and a report mid-October. If you wanted to provide any feedback on these questions, it's welcome at any time. You can send it by email on our wiki. And if you wanted anything to be factored into that document in October, I'd say get it in by mid-September at the latest, and then we can have time to assess it. And then after that, it'll be open for public comment. Please feel free. We'll be coming back to the community in Buenos Aires for a final touch, and then we have to provide our report by December 31st. So that's our timeline. But really appreciate the interaction. Thank you.
And I want to say thank you from our side for having us. And, of course, our doors are open. If you have more questions, if you request more input, please come back to us.
Thanks. I'll do.